Hi everyone, this is Renee Rentmeester. I'm the creator and executive producer of the Cooking Without T Looking TV show and podcast. And today I'm here with Mike Smith. Mike, how is it going?
It's going pretty good, and you, Renee?
It's going great. It's going great. We're all here on time, so like that makes me happy. So, hey Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself and your blindness.
So I was born with underdeveloped optic nerves hypoplasia. They're not exactly sure why. I was the only family member that's ever had it. So I've been a Braille reader my entire life, but I'm also considered low vision, so I can read really large print, although slow. And I've always had a passion for cooking and have spent a lot of time even growing up in the kitchen.
Oh, that's amazing. So how much can you see? Like, what can you see and what can't you see?
So I can see a little bit in front of me, enough that I can somewhat cross the street safely. I still do use the cane, but I also I depend on a lot of different accessible technologies. It's kind of hard to describe. I have two different vision acuities. Some people it'll make sense to, some it won't. My nearsightedness is about 20 over 600, which is still pretty bad. And my nearsightedness is about 20 over 15 or 1600, depending on the eye that you look at.
Oh wow. So yeah, you can see better out of one eye than the other, basically.
Yeah, but with the sight that I have, it's not really noticeable to me. It's more noticeable to the doctors.
Ah, I see. I see. Well, tell us, we were talking a little bit before this. Tell us how you were raised, how your parents raised you.
So I was raised with the attitude that I was not blind, which had its advantages and disadvantages. I was basically raised with the attitude that you can do anything a sighted person can do. You just may have to try a bit harder. Like, I grew up in the middle of nowhere and moved to the big city when I was about seven. So, and I still spent a lot of time out in the farm, out in my grandpa raised about 20 cows up until probably the 2000, middle to early 2000s. And so I spent a lot of time out there and learned how to drive things that a lot of people haven't driven and things like that, because I was raised not sighted, because I was raised more sighted than blind. I also went mostly to an all sighted school. I played sighted sports in middle school and high school as well.
So is your sight, is it going down or is it staying about the same?
They said that it'll stay about the same because basically, as the doctor put it, I have nerves that are kind of like a newborn baby. So they've just never fully developed, and there is a chance, very slight, that I could get my sight back. I was actually just at an eye appointment, I think back in June. I don't go as often as I probably should because there's not really a point. But going into a program that I enrolled in, I needed a new eye exam. And we were talking about it because I remember when I was a kid, I had less sight, or so I perceived. But the doctor basically told me it's because I've actually learned to use a sight I've had as I get older.
Oh, now do your eyes get any stronger? Is that possible?
Yeah, he said that is possible. He said he's done a lot of, this is the first doctor I've ever had that has studied optic nerve hypoplasia the most. Most doctors focus on, say, like the glaucoma and stuff. And he said that it's not highly likely, but there is a chance.
And what if you did get your sight fully back? What would you think at that point?
I think because I can see a lot of what the world is like around me, I don't think it would make much of a difference, except for the fact that I could drive, which, I mean, not legally I'm not supposed to, but I have done it.
Oh God.
So, I mean,
are you going to put that out on Facebook, warn us?
Yeah, well, I don't usually drive on the roads. So, if somebody takes me driving, it's usually out on a piece of property, so
you know, that's
most,
a good idea.
Most of the rest of you guys are safe.
Well, you know what? Somebody mentioned that a couple of weeks ago. Like, if you're blind and you really have a yearning to drive, just to get, maybe go out into a parking lot when like there's no one there, like early in the
Yep.
morning, something,
I
and
think it's
our system.
an experience that every blind person should have, because I do believe that, being being a blind person, you do miss out on so many things that mean a lot to sighted people. Like, I have a friend who I love learning about how to restore old cars and things like that. And I have a friend who is completely blind, who has restored a Mustang.
Wow.
And so him and I talked back and forth, and he suggested that I get in with small engines. I took small engines in high school, but of course I'm relearning everything because it's been so long.
Sure. Well, also, you mentioned a little while ago that you actually went to school for you went to culinary school. Tell us about that experience.
So it was I it was a frustrating experience. I lasted about 2 weeks in culinary school.
Oh my.
I was doing really well, but the one thing about culinary school is you learn the French way to do things, because a lot of our culinary is based off of the French methods.
Right.
So you have to learn how to julienne and make what they call paysans and cubes, and it's to the point where they bring a ruler around when you make your cuts in the morning, and they measure your cuts.
Oh my God.
And I struggled. I can make fairly decent cuts. My cuts aren't great, but they aren't anything that would make a dish look absolutely horrible. It's never going my dish is never going to be that top shelf that you see on some of these cooking shows.
Right.
It'll taste just as good. It just will not have the presentation because my cuts are a little off, and I could have probably learned these cuts if the chef was willing to take some time. And so what happened basically is I asked for extra help. The school said, we can't accommodate you, and they basically gave me two options. You can either be unenrolled from the class, or you can continue on, and the chances of you passing the one class are very slim.
That's horrible.
Even if I were to do well on everything else, I would still pass that class, and I would have spent the next 2 years repeating that class every semester, which, I mean, maybe wouldn't have been a bad thing, but it would have definitely extended how long I was in culinary school. And that's a lot of money to be forking out.
Yeah, and when you say making cuts, you mean like if you're cutting vegetables in a certain way, the juliennes?
Yeah, you have to do vegetables. One of the first things when you come in is they inspect your uniform. You're supposed to have a nicely pressed uniform. There's not supposed to be any stains on it. You're supposed to bleach your chef whites. They do an inspection on that. And then your next job is to set out a tray of all the tools you'll need for the day. They grade you on that. And then the next thing is they grade you on your cuts. So they give you like carrots, celery, onions, and you have to cut all of those. They tell you what they want the shapes cut into.
Oh, well
And the
now,
onion was probably the easiest part.
yes. Well, how do you cut an onion?
So when I do an onion, the biggest thing is to make sure your onion is level, and you want to minimize as much food waste as possible. So what I do is I cut one end off the onion and keep the root end attached, and then I cut through the root to cut the onion in half again, and then I square the onion. And if I'm going to do like little squares, I will cut strips into the onion. And then I go back and cut the opposite way to make those squares. Because at that point, the root's still attached. So if you don't cut all the way through, you can make really nice squares. And by cutting off the side pieces of your onion and shaping it into something you can work with, and it's the same with a carrot. If you cut it into something you can work with, you can always find a use for those extra scraps.
Oh, that's cool. Well, you know what? Me with the extra scraps would just throw it into a slow cooker and make some soup out of it.
I do that, or I make, when I'm actually in my own place, I tend to make my own chicken or beef stock. So those pieces are really good for that, because at the end, you're going to end up straining them out and throwing them away anyway. So at least you're getting the use out of them.
And the flavor.
Yep, you're getting the use and the flavor. Don't ask me about my experiments with clear stock. That is very difficult.
Well, tell us what you're up to now. You said that you're working in a restaurant and a special program for the blind.
So they have a program. A lot of people know it as Randolph Shepherd. It was signed, I think, around 1935 or 1936 when President Franklin D. Roosevelt was trying to help us through the Great Depression. And basically, what this means is that each state has a program, and they are operated differently between each state, but it gives people with blind and visual impairments preferences for cafes, newsstands, stores, vending machine routes in government buildings. Now, here in New York, they have started, local city governments have also started getting in on the program. So they're starting to open up new facilities here.
Oh, that's
They
great.
also have cafes. So right now I'm in the training stage. I just actually got done. You have to take a technology exam to see. They basically give you all the training. They're giving you all the tools. They're covering your rent, your equipment costs. You own the business, but they're covering everything to make you successful. And so basically, after a certain amount that you make, you pay what's called a tax that goes back into the program so they can keep giving you new equipment and making the program better.
Oh, that's tremendous. What a great program.
And they knew that I was into cooking, so they partnered me up for what they call work experience training with a gentleman who's running a cafe. And so he's teaching me how to run it as a blind person.
Is he blind?
Yes, he is.
Okay. And what have you learned? What have you found to be interesting so far?
Actually, right now, he actually just went into the hospital yesterday. This is my second week there. I'm there until December. So I was started off on cash last week, and I had never, I not to brag, but I scored the highest score on the technology exam here in
Yay,
the state.
brag.
And so I taught him how to use the speech on his square reader, and I had never actually used a square. The square system before. And so the most so far what I've learned is I spent a lot of time on cash, and learning to do cash as a blind person, it's something you kind of sit there and think, well, I'm never going to be able to do that if you've never had the experience with it. And once you have the experience, you're like, though, for me, it just opened up a whole thing of if I can do this, then there's a lot of other stuff I can do.
Sure, exactly. Well, tell us about the recipe you sent us.
So I sent you a recipe for what I call beef tips and gravy. It's not as traditional as what everybody else would be using, but there was a lady when I first moved out on my own. I knew how to cook, but she taught me some skills because she was blind. She taught me some skills that she picked up. And this was one of the first recipes that she taught me. And I've, of course, modified it over the years
Sure.
from what she taught me. And everybody seems to like this recipe. It's simple, it's easy to make. It's basically one pan if you don't count the rice. So it's very simple. The ingredients are simple. I mean, there's lots of things you can do with this recipe.
So just if you want, Mike, just run us through the recipe a little bit.
So the way I do it is I buy a package of stew meat and I cut the stew meat down into bite-sized pieces. And I also cut up an onion. You can cut the onion any way you like. In fact, I am going to be trying it a different way this next time I make it because I used to make it with slices, with squares. I just cut my onion into squares, onion and pepper into squares. This next time, I'm going to go with a thin slice because I think it will give the texture. I think it'll give it a bit different texture. I like the idea of the onion strings. And then I add red and green peppers. The original recipe does not call for that. Those I do cut into squares. And you're going to want to make whatever rice that you like to eat on the side. And you're also going to need a package of gravy mix, and you're going to need a little bit of cream cheese.
Oh,
So
that sounds good.
basically, it's really good. So basically, what you're going to do is you're going to fry your meat with your vegetables. Preheat your skillet with whatever oil of choice. Just in my experience, if you're going to use olive oil, add equal amounts olive oil and butter, because then your olive oil doesn't smoke. Because olive oil has a low smoke point to begin with. So if you get your pan screaming hot, you're going to burn your oil, and then your food won't be good. So you want to use a higher temp oil, like avocado oil is good. Vegetable oil is good. Most any other oil you can get away with. I probably would not use sesame oil only because it will change the flavor of the dish.
Yeah, it'll make it sort of Asian tasting.
I've done it in a pinch and it's not horrible, but it does give it a nutty flavor that you're not used to.
Right.
So once you've cooked all that together, you take basically the package of gravy mix. Says 1 package of water or 1 cup of water to 1 package of gravy mix. To be fair, sometimes I use 1 package of gravy mix to 2 cups of water. And you can either mix it up in a cup of hot water, or you can just be a rebel and sprinkle the gravy over and pour the water in and mix the whole thing up. It really depends on what mood I'm in. And once your gravy thickens, you just cut little pieces of cream cheese and add to that. And me, because I, after working in a restaurant all day, sometimes I'm lazy. So I will take my already pre-made rice and I'll throw it in there and just mix it all together. But the original way to serve it is to spoon it over the top of the rice. And you can really do anything with it. If you like the mushroom gravy better, you can chop up little mushrooms and also saute them and then make your brown gravy, add that and add a can of cream of mushroom soup, which I did not include in the recipe, but you can do that as well.
Oh, that sounds really good. I like
And
the
then,
idea of the cream cheese. I've never heard of anyone putting cream cheese in their gravy, but it makes a lot of sense.
it makes it creamy without you having to do extra work. Because if you really want to make a gravy creamy, you really have to start with a milk gravy, which then changes your color. You could add brown gravy mixed to milk. I've never actually tried, but I know somebody who has done it. But the milk lightens your gravy quite a bit. And the one thing I've learned working in a restaurant, a lot of sighted people judge their food based on how it looks.
Now, do they like it? Do
And
most people like it a dark looking gravy or a light looking gravy?
yeah, they like, if you're saying you're serving it with a brown gravy, they want their gravy to be that golden brown.
Right.
Me personally, I get mad at family members here when they say, "Oh, that doesn't look good," because I have the attitude. I try it once. And luckily for me, I can't see it all that well. So it doesn't really matter to me as
Right.
long as it tastes good.
Now, did I see you with a snake around you in a picture on your Facebook page?
Yes, when I was in Vietnam, I love snakes.
Okay.
And when I was in Vietnam, I got a chance to hold a python, a very large python.
I saw that. What was that like?
That was an amazing experience. When I lived on my own years ago, I used to have corn snakes, which are significantly smaller. They get maybe 4 feet long, where this python had to be a good 8 feet long. I mean, he could have wrapped himself around me twice.
It looked like he was wrapped around you. It did. I'm like, oh
He
my God,
did. At one point, he crawled into my shirt and he was just laying there.
what? Aw. Wow. So did it, I guess you weren't nervous because you love snakes.
Yeah, I wasn't nervous, but the person I was with was freaking out.
That doesn't help.
No.
Well, Mike, let me how would people reach out to you if they want to reach out to you?
So if they want to reach out, I'm always on Facebook at Mike Smith. That's probably the best way. Just send a message before you send a request to tell me how you met me. Unless I recognize your name, then I'll probably just accept it. I'm always up for talking, especially about cooking. If I can help somebody to be a better cook in the kitchen or feel better about stuff, or they're looking for accessible technology recommendations. I'm always around. Well, when I'm not working anyways. So the best way would be just to search up Mike Smith. And that would probably be the best.
Well, that sounds great. Do you have any parting message you have for us?
You can cook anything you put your mind to, even with vision loss. It's just in the technology and learning the correct skills. There's really nothing out of your reach. And that was something I struggled with for many years. And it's been in the last few years that I've really understood what my capabilities are. And just, I guess I would say, remember, you're always capable, no matter what anybody says.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful news, sir. That's wonderful thoughts for anyone. And again, thank you so much, Mike, for being with us today. We will have, well, we do. We have your recipe up on our Cooking Without Looking website. That's cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. If you missed that, just Google Cooking Without Looking and you'll be able to go to our website, go to the blog section, and you'll find tips and you'll find Mike's recipe. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you so much, Renee.
And thank you for helping us change the way we see blindness. Have a great afternoon.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.